When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We're brought to you by the Maryland Vehicle Theft Prevention Council. Maryland drivers, did you know a vehicle is stolen every 16 minutes in the state of Maryland? The key to preventing theft is in your hands. Lock your car, take your key, use an anti-theft device. Learn more about vehicle theft prevention at mdautotheft.org. Right now, it is our pleasure to welcome to the show a reporter from the Washington Post who has been covering the ongoing saga. Man, this has been ongoing for, I don't know, a decade plus, but it has finally come to an end, at least the first biggest hurdle of it. The RFK Stadium site and the land around it is finally going to be in the hands of the District of Columbia, which means the Commanders can continue their pursuit of moving the team back there. Erin Cox has been covering it for the Washington Post, and she joins us now. Erin, how are you doing this afternoon, and happy holidays to you.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I'm doing all right, though. I have to tell you, I have a little bit of anxiety about Congress and whether this saga actually will end and if we'll pass the bill as drafted and deliver all the things that you just talked about.
Okay, so Erin, let me kick back and you just put your feet up on the couch and I'm going to help you talk through your anxiety here for the entertainment of our audience. We'll keep it just to whatever anxiety is about this bill. We don't need to talk about whatever else is going on in your life. I hope there's not much on the anxiety front. So the current agreement, the way that I read yours and Sam's and the rest of your colleagues' story at the Post is that currently, after much negotiation with the senators from the state of Maryland, and Governor Wes Moore was involved in some of this, at least his wishes kind of get carried out by the senators, Chuck Schumer, the majority leader's office, that there's an exchange of these fighter jets and some assurances that the land oversight is going to be redeveloped if the Commanders do wind up moving out of Maryland, and it's in the spending bill. What is the anxiety that that might not actually wind up happening?
Right. So, I mean, like, this is a deal that sounds like it was, like, written for, like, a bad political drama, right? That they're going to trade fighter jets for a football stadium and also get a bridge funding. And they crammed all of this stuff into what's known as a continuing resolution. This is, you know, a technicality that goes through Congress that says we can't pass a whole new budget, but we're just going to keep going with the spending plan we have on the books for a certain period of time. And so this thing was negotiated for hours and hours and hours. Schumer was involved. House Speaker Johnson was involved. This thing took weeks, and it was complex and multi-layered, and they put out this bill yesterday evening that has RFK being given to the city. It has Maryland getting the fighter jets. It has money to rebuild the bridge in Baltimore, and it seemed like this, you know, grand bargain made everybody happy, and here it was, and then the House Republicans were like, yeah, no thanks, I'm not really sure we're in on that. Elon Musk started tweeting about it today, saying, I don't think we should pass this. Donald Trump has weighed in on Twitter, or excuse me, on Fox, and said, I'm not sure we're going to do it. So now there's a lot of uncertainty about whether this grand bargain that has been negotiated, you know, and it includes tons of other things, right, like farm aid and, you know, anybody in Congress who wants to get something before they leave town have tried to shove it into this bill. And so now it's unclear if they're actually going to pass it, or if they just decide to take strip all of that stuff out and just go with a straight bill. So I have anxiety that after days and days and days and days of watching this deal come together, figuring out behind the scenes all of these, you know, billionaires and governors and senators all figuring out what they could do to make each other happy, that it all kind of goes up in flames and nothing happens.
So just to be clear, this is House Republicans, the incoming president and his, we'll call them advisors. They might kill the entire bill, not something specific to the RFK site. The negotiation that there are some farm provision that the Iowa caucus of people have been working on that also got stuffed into this bill. I'm just making that up, but it probably happened. And other things around the country that have been pork barreled into this that are also at risk here. Nothing specific to the RFK site.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, there has been, you know, Elon Musk retweeted some inaccurate information about the RFK site and said that it can't pass Congress. But I'm not really sure how, you know, but the Republicans were objecting to that before on some of them on financial grounds, right? That, like, this is, as one lawmaker put it to me, that, like, there's not very, very many trains leaving the station at this point. Congress adjourns, you know, by the end of the week. They have to keep the government moving. They're not moving a lot of bills. So anybody who wants anything out of this Congress had to get it into this bill. And now it seems like the House Republicans, at least maybe enough of them, maybe not enough of them, are wary of passing a bill with all this stuff shoved into it.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So Erin Cox is our guest. She's a reporter, covers Capitol Hill, covers the state of Maryland, covers local politics here in D.C., all for the Washington Post. Like, I don't want to get too far down the politics rabbit hole because this is ultimately a sports show. At least that's what they tell me. And so I will just ask you, I'll ask it this way, Erin. So much of our current politics is nothing remotely close to politics as usual for the last 20, 30 years of American politics, if not farther back. Government spending has been one that still is typically, from my understanding, politics as usual. There have been a few government shutdowns. Maybe it's a little more contentious. There's a little more peacocking by various members of Congress about certain things because we live politically in an attention economy and they want their cable news hits or whatever. But typically these things do get done. Do you feel like that is the anxiety come from kind of that, and do you think there's like real risk that this isn't going to be your typical continuing resolution funding bill that even if there's a government shutdown for a couple of days ultimately gets passed without too much damage, and certainly this RFK provision being stripped out of it?
Well, if the question is what is my anxiety about, my anxiety is I really felt like I was done writing about RFK. And, you know, I happen to be married to a sports writer and live not that far from RFK. So this is an issue that we talk a lot about at my home, that my neighbors and I talk about, that it seemed like this saga was finally going to end, you know, and you're kind of like, it's like you get a cliffhanger, right? You thought you were going to get that satisfying ending, and instead you get a cliffhanger, and that's kind of where we are.
Got it. Got it. So let's pretend that it all works out, that the silly politics of it all is the usual song and dance, and then eventually they all vote, and some things get changed, some things don't. But the RFK part of this stays in, and RFK goes under the control of the District of Columbia government.
We're in that parallel timeline.
Yeah, we're in that parallel timeline slash future timeline where the conversations in your house and my house and all the houses around D.C. that want to see this happen or at least want a resolution, it ends in that way. What kind of fight are we in for within D.C. city government between city council, the mayor's office? And it seems like there's a little more harmony there than there has been in the past. But once they are done having to play nice together to get this thing out of Congress, I could certainly see that the politics of that change. So what are we looking for there within D.C. once the land is back under their control for it to ultimately wind up being, at least in part, a Commander Stadium site?
Right. So, I mean, that is like a 90-step process. And, you know, the thing is, like, the politics of sports stadiums makes all sorts of funny bedfellows. People get aligned when they wouldn't be aligned on other issues. I mean, and the thing that we're talking about is that, you know, this is 190 acres right on the waterfront. If you ever come into D.C. off of 295 and you have to go around the big rusting thing to get to the Capitol, we're talking about all of those athletic fields, all of that kind of like parkland, all of those parking lots. It's a huge amount of property, and it's right next to a metro station. So this is basically like one of the hugest undeveloped tracts of waterfront property in D.C. So if you can imagine who would have interest in having a say in what happens there, and then add in money and add in power, you just end up with this huge dynamic of complicated mess. And so D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser really wants a stadium there. She wants mixed use. She wants housing. She wants an entertainment destination. She wants, you know, to transform that whole area. The people who live there are not universally thrilled about having a football stadium there. So you have to get all of them on board. City Council has been pretty divided on it. The mayor would have to negotiate with the team on a deal that works for the team. You know, the economics have to work. People talk about how much money there is in football, and there certainly is a lot, but that doesn't mean that there's a couple billion dollars laying around to build a stadium. You know, you just bought a team. You also have to finance a couple billion dollars to build a stadium. So you have to work out all of the economics of what does the city offer the team. They just offered, you know, what was it, $500
million? Yeah, $535 million to Leontis.
Yes, exactly, to keep him in the city, right? Yep. Like, this isn't a time when governments are flush with cash. This is a time when governments are looking very hard at budgets, making really hard choices. So, like, on a lot of levels, in the parallel timeline where this bill clears Congress and the city gets control of the land and they get to determine the future there, in a lot of ways, that's sort of a whole new chapter in this saga of what is the city going to offer? How are they going to get them on board? How are all of the councilmen going to agree? How are all the people who live in the neighborhood agree? So it's, you know, kind of the beginning of the next chapter.
I know the Washington Post has tremendous abilities to conduct polls, but since you said you lived in the neighborhood, have you at least done like a straw poll of your neighbors and how you guys feel on that side of town about it?
You know, it's honestly like pretty split. I mean, I want to say there's also a high level of kind of better than whatever, as long as it's not what it is, I'm better than nothing. There's a lot of people who are really not into it because they think it would create a parking mess. You know, I live not even, I wouldn't call, like maybe a 20-minute walk. And when I first moved in like 10 years ago, there were signs on the park. There were still signs up that said no parking on game days, right? Like the parking signs still say that. So I think that there's like trepidation. People, you know, and people are concerned about change. And there's also like, you know, divided opinion on whether, you know, a private entity deserves tax-free land, right? Like, do they deserve public investment? So I don't know. This is me dancing around your question because I don't want to sell out any of my neighbors. But I would say... that I do not think that the neighborhood would be the loudest cheering squad for the stadium.
Fair enough. Aaron Cox with us from the Washington Post. And that's totally fair. And like, I don't live on that side of town, but like as a district resident, like the idea of giving Josh Harris and his ownership group, which has a net worth, I think in total somewhere north of $50 billion, my tax money. I'm like, I don't think you guys need it. I feel like there's some other stuff, but also if it generates revenue, like, and then you get all the experts that study this stuff, all the economists screaming that actually that revenue is it wouldn't make any. They're not making more money on a sports stadium than you do if you did something else. So it is very complicated and complex, and opinions are varied. Yet the state of Maryland, they're pretty straightforward. They are like, whether it's Westmore or the local folks in PG County, like they would like to see Landover 2.0. What is their rationale for that? And also, I guess the bigger question is, what kind of realistic case do they have to convince that after all of this, all of the lobbying, all of the waiting, all the everything, the spiritual home being in D.C., as it's been said by many people, including Josh Harris, that Maryland on the merits is actually for time, for money, for whatever, a better site and the chances that you give that actually happening?
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess to answer your first question of like, what do they want there? I mean, I think what they really want is not to have the next RFK in Landover, right? They don't want a big old resting stadium that nobody uses and parking lots that just sit there. And the team owns, you know, Dan Snyder bought up a lot of land out there. The team already owns 200 acres around the stadium. So they own a huge amount of property that's not far from, you know, that's near the Beltway. It's not in, you know, it's near a metro stop. Anybody who's had to like make that walk from the metro stop knows it's not next to a metro stop, right? So, I mean, the big thing that they want is to, like, not get screwed over is what they want. They still, I mean, they make an argument that they think that they can offer the team a better deal. I've talked to Westmore personally about this a couple times, and he is very bullish on it. He's, you know, bullish every single time you talk to him about it. He really thinks that Maryland can put together some sort of package that makes Landover attractive, whether that's tax incentives, whether it's tax breaks on development, whether it's creating some sort of easy, you know, anytime you build stuff, you have to get permits and regulations, and it's very complicated making it easier to build there. The state's already invested $400 million into redeveloping the area around the stadium. They're trying to get that whole corridor after you hit the city line coming out of the city into Maryland, that whole corridor along the blue line to be an entertainment district. So they have this big grand plan and they want the team to fit into it. And so they consistently threw out this until very recently seemed to think that they were going to have a really competitive shot. But, you know, waterfront land in the city where you could build a stadium that has a view of the Capitol in the background. I mean, I think realistically, they know it's hard to compete with that.
For sure. The last part of this, Aaron, is the practice facility side. And I don't know how much you've gotten into this with the folks that you talk to, but they're going to need to upgrade or move and create a new practice facility at some point in the next decade, if not half decade as well. And it's something Josh Harris has said, like, yeah, we gotta do this. Currently, obviously, they're headquartered in Virginia on that side. Virginia doesn't seem to be at all in the market here on the stadium side of things. I'm sure they would love to keep the practice facility, but could that be a use of that 200 acres, or where do we stand on that? And is Virginia at all a player in either retaining the practice facility or getting involved late here on the stadium pitch?
I mean, I wouldn't underestimate the political will of anybody in this region to figure out how to make a deal, right? I wouldn't write off Virginia, but I definitely think I cover Maryland, so I know a lot more about Maryland. And, you know, they know about that practice facility. They know that if you build a practice facility over there, all of those players with all of their incomes might move closer to the practice facility, right? And then you get to tax all of their income. That's not a bad deal. You don't have to deal with all the traffic from the stadium. You know, you don't have to deal with the political pushback from giving public dollars to build a football stadium. So in a lot of ways, a training facility would be an exceptional consolation prize for Maryland. And they're no dummies. They know that. They would definitely take a training facility if they can't get a stadium. You know, and so, and the team has a lot of assets to shop around, right? Like, the team is the one in the driver's seat at this point, you know, like they have to get deals out of all of these jurisdictions. But on some level, it's kind of crazy that, you know, a private institution owned by billionaires can pit three different governments against each other to fight for who can give them the best deal for all of the things that they want to build.
And of course, the funniest part of that is Dan Snyder had that going for a decade, and he was so bad at business that he couldn't get anything.
Yeah. I feel like it's probably not safe for me to say anything about Dan Snyder.
Fair enough. We'll just keep it moving. Erin Cox, you can read her work on this in the Washington Post. She's been teaming up with a whole number of colleagues, including our guy Sam Fortier, on this. Erin, an absolute pleasure to have you. Thanks so much for your insight, and we will certainly have you back as this continues to unfold over the next week or two here at the end of the year with the CR and all the things that are giving us anxiety.
Yes, it was great to be here. And, you know, if this radio thing doesn't work out, you can look into being a therapist. You did great. I feel much better.
Excellent. Yeah, I had to give one of my colleagues, we call it football therapy, yesterday. So we're just, you know, one therapy session a day on the show. It apparently keeps us going. Thanks, Erin.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, that's Erin Cox with us here on The Hoffman Show. Real quick before we take a break and come back for Competition Wednesday, here is Mayor Bowser this morning on the Sports Junkies on what she sees as the next step and the time frame for all of this going down.
All right, so if it's voted on later this week and it passes, then what exactly is the next step?
The next steps are we will proceed with demolishing the current site. We will proceed with developing our vision, having discussions with the team, community, and our stakeholders. And we will aim to have an agreement with the team.
So this is a big deal, Mayor
Bowser.
It's a
very big deal. Yeah.
What is the time frame where you feel like you could get a commitment from the team?
From Josh Harris.
Well, I always think we should do things yesterday. I think they have a very significant time crunch. They have a lease in. Josh Harris has stated publicly he'd like to be in the stadium by 2030. And in order for all of those things to happen, I think that we have to have an agreement this year.
They've got to go fast because construction takes a long time in D.C. You have all this permits. You have unions, which, like, unions are great, but they, you know, involve certain and a little bit of extra paperwork and making sure that certain things are followed. That in, you know, states where there are construction with less rules, let's say, that perhaps you can move a little bit faster. And so it is a huge time crunch, and they're already going to have to extend the lease in Landover. They're already going to have to be in that stadium 2 years longer than they would have if they could have gotten this done any number of years ago. And that's the thing, is like they have been working on this for a long time, but the people in charge were both incompetent and corrupt enough that folks at the Capitol did not want to play ball with them. They did not want to release the land to Dan Snyder. They just didn't. I don't think that it's coincidence that we are closer than we've ever been because Josh Harris is involved. Also, you know, for all of the silly talk about, oh, well, Bruce Allen's really connected. Bruce Allen's a political animal. He knows these people. Bruce couldn't get anything done. Josh Harris is on the team for a year, and he and Mitch Rales and Magic Johnson and, like, this group, they've gotten it farther than anybody else has before. And maybe it still fails, but it's not going to fail because of them. It's going to fail because Congress is broken and this is the way politics are done. And then all of a sudden you think you have a deal because all the people that you were doing the politicking with, you got the handshake here and the kiss the baby there. And then, oh, wait, we forgot about that guy who just came in. And especially, like, again, whether you agree with him or not, the way that Donald Trump operates coming in, even though he's not even president yet, he's kind of blown away the one president at a time thing. Because he's got the Republican caucus wrapped around his finger. And again, I'm not going to comment whether I agree or not with that, or you know, whether I agree with what they're doing in this particular case or not. But all of a sudden, he has a tendency to change his mind on a whim or get involved in something that he becomes a pet project for him. Or Elon Musk, all of a sudden, the richest man in the world, is like, hey, I got an opinion, and now he's in, and now the Republican caucus in the House is like, yeah, we know we agreed on this and we gave it to you a bunch of months ago, but surprise, and now here we are. And so this is the way that things unfortunately tend to get done. If you want a better way, then vote in different people. And it's important to remember that in this process, we, the collective citizenry, have power here. We can run for things. We can vote for things. We can pressure the people that represent us. And we just got to hope that the system works the best we can. And if not, then we elect someone else. And, you know, there's a lot of money involved in politics now. And I could go on about all this stuff, but this is the way it's done. And unfortunately, because of D.C.'s lack of statehood, because of our lack of control in the district over our own affairs, we're at the mercy of all of that. And that is just the sad, sad reality of the situation. But hopefully that reality changes as soon as this weekend. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And when we get back, it is time for something fun. Competition Wednesday.